Everyone, and welcome to episode 4 of season 9 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final 2 Die Hard movies, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again this season is Todd Liebenow of the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Hello, great to be back.
Yeah, back for some more Die Hard. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
Always fun.
Nope. Yep. Got to do it. You know, I mean, people kind of turn up their noses a little bit at these last 2 entries, but you know, we still gotta do it. We gotta complete the cycle here. You know.
That's right. Have you seen both 4 and 5?
I have. I've seen 4 a number of times. 5 I've only seen once, but I do have the Blu-ray set of all 5, and you know, I've been going through them with my son. So you know, we will do 5 eventually here, even though it's, you know, I think he already knows going in that it's the least of the diehards.
Well, you watched 4 with him now to prepare for this?
We did, yeah. Friday night, we watched Die Hard or Live Free or Die Hard. I told him, he came home from work that day. I was like, hey, I've got to rewatch the 4th Die Hard movie for a podcast. So are you in? And he's like, yeah, let's watch it tonight. So
you said, I have homework. Well, at least this time I'm giving you a movie that you've already seen, you know, unlike last time where you had to get a first watch,
you know, yeah,
of Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm glad that
wasn't as emotional for you. Hopefully this one wasn't as emotional for you.
Oh, you know, I mean, there's so many things about this that just, you know, choke you up inside, you know, but yeah, no, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. Right. All right. So episode 4 begins with an explosion in the apartment and ends with John wanting answers from Farrell.
Actually, if anything choked me up, it's that this explosion took out all those wonderful toys that that Matt has. Because I'm like, oh no,
that's true.
The Terminator is no more. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, Jay and I talked a little bit about this stuff yesterday, obviously. So, but you know, some of the toys, they are collector's items, you know. So I think Farrell lost a lot of money in that, because my assumption is he's renting the apartment. He doesn't own it. So, you know, he didn't lose money on the apartment. He just lost money on everything in the apartment that he probably, it won't be easy for him to replace.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
And see, I mean, what chokes me up about that is that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I always have. You know, I for many years in my office, I had, you know, like every open space covered with like Happy Meal toys, you know, that were movie tie-ins and things like that. My coworkers would call my office the museum because I had all this stuff in there. Now I don't have as many things. I just have a few Funko Pops at my office. But
you have a few what?
Funko Pops, you know, they're those little figures with the big heads, and they'll do ones that are tie-ins to different, you know, pop culture properties, movies, TV, comics, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, like
aren't those bobbleheads?
Well, they look a little like bobbleheads, and I think they do make a few of them that are bobbleheads, but I wouldn't call them bobbleheads. They kind of, you know, look like they could be, but they just have big heads. And so, like, I mean, I've got a Mickey Mouse one. I've got a Sloth from the Goonies. I've got Bill Murray's character from Groundhog Day. So yeah, I've got a number of things.
Interesting. Okay. I, like I said, I've never heard that before. Interesting. I'll have to look into that. Wait, so Groundhog Day had like a tie-in?
Well,
that doesn't count.
See, the thing is, with a lot of those, they release them way after, you know, the fact. So it's not like it was released as the movie came out. It's just they put ones out based on properties that the fans love and things like that. Like recently, you know, and probably this is for the 40th anniversary, but I saw ones that came out for the characters from The Breakfast Club, you know. So, you know, I wouldn't say that it's a, you know, piece of Breakfast Club merchandise necessarily that tied into the movie because it didn't come out at the time, but they're kind of they're playing off of people's nostalgia.
Okay. Makes sense. Did you see the recent I guess interview with the cast?
I've seen some little bits. I didn't watch the whole thing.
It's worth an hour of your time. For those of us who are nostalgic for the Breakfast Club, it's actually great listening to a lot of the tidbits they talk about there and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I found it to be quite eye opening and interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I recommend seeing. Again, if you're a fan of the movie and of the Brat Pack.
I enjoy the movie. It's not my, my tops when it comes to John Hughes stuff, but I do enjoy it.
But it's not my tops either. Everyone knows what my tops. Anyone who knows me and my podcast know what my tops is when it comes to John Hughes.
Yeah.
But still. And they do talk about that. They asked each of them what's their favorite John Hughes movie, and two of them actually said Plane, Trains and Automobiles.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah, I believe if I remember correctly, it was Emilio Estevez and Anthony Michael Hall. If I remember correctly, but I could be wrong. About that, but there aren't. I think Judd Nelson said Ferris Bueller. I think I don't know. I guess I'll have to go rewatch it just to find out. What their favorites were. To me, it just stood out that two of them said the Plane, Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. I figured that you probably grew up not far from Shermer, Illinois. So,
Somewhat. I mean, I think, Shermer, Illinois, quote unquote, is technically
Glenbrook.
I don't remember exactly which place it is, but it's more kind of the northwest suburbs, if I remember correctly. And where I grew up is kind of due west. I did actually, though, have a friend who, I knew for several years that lived in my area and then moved to a different area of the Chicago suburbs and was there at the high school where they shot a lot of those John Hughes things. So the Breakfast Club library was her library type of a thing,
That's actually very cool. Yeah. All right. So let's get into Die Hard 4. So we ended things yesterday with, as you mentioned earlier, the Terminator figurine happening to fall exactly on the delete button, which Jay and I discussed the fact that anyone who knows computers would not be pressing the delete button the way they do. that's not, at least not on its own. If you're going to press something, it's going to be Control Alt
right
together.
Right.
But, okay. Yeah. And the apartment blew up, and we get the end of this massive explosion, which is pretty cool. It's a pretty cool explosion, the way that they do here. We see the chairs flying and stuff like that, and then we get a shot from the scope of the sniper's rifle as he's looking back and forth between the the two windows, watching all of the destruction there and trying to figure out if everyone is dead or alive or who knows. He's not able to figure it out, and then he takes his gun and starts getting ready to put it away.
Right.
And then we're in the apartment, and John realizes that he has a few minutes or a few seconds to spare. And he quickly grabs the rifle that's on the ground. And then Farrell goes, what the hell is that? And John goes, what? And he goes, did you do that? He says, no. And he goes, I didn't do that. Come on. Stay close. The whole apartment's on fire. Come on, let's go. Come on, let's go. God damn it. Come on. Watch it. Slow it down. And I mean, basically, Farrell is in complete shock about this whole thing. John has, given himself a weapon and he's getting ready to get out of there. And he just wants to get Farrell out of there. And, they look around, they see the door is actually blocked by the fire, and John then decides that what they're going to do is they're going to actually leave via the fire escape.
because it's a fire, and then, you know, fire escape, right. You leave by the way of the fire. I've never lived in a building or worked in a building that had a fire escape like this, you know, like the kind you associate with, you know, a New York setting. You know, all the buildings have a fire escape like this. People hang out on the fire escape, or, you know, when you need to break into the building, you climb up the fire escape. And it, I mean, I know they've got them everywhere, but it always strikes me as being a very New York thing.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever lived in a building with one either. You're right. I felt that I lived in one because I watched so many episodes of Friends, but you know. But never did that.
So you could go out there and stare at ugly naked guy, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Or have Chandler catch a smoke when no one's watching.
Right.
Yeah.
I actually just got through that. I've been working my way through Friends again because it's been a long time, and I always kind of have rituals for different shows that I will put on for different household tasks. So right now, Friends is my ironing show. So like when I've done the laundry and I need to iron my shirts for work, I put on an episode of Friends while I'm ironing. So I've just finished season 3 on that, working my way through them again.
You have a lot of shirts to iron. That's what you're telling me.
Well, some, you know, I for the most part, I'm pretty casual, but I do wear shirts I have to iron when I go into the office. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. If that works for you. And, you know, the added bonus is you get to watch episodes of Friends.
Yes.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So then, you know, Farrell goes, oh, my God, oh, my God. And John just goes, let's go. Come on. Come on. Stay close. Stay with me. Stay with me. Come on. Let's go. Stay close. You know, and the two of them get onto the fire escape and, you know, go down. Now, I got to say, it's pretty brave of John to do it this way, since he knows that somebody is trying to kill them from both outside and inside. And, you know, to go down a fire escape, that wouldn't necessarily be the best plan at this point.
No, yeah, it's very convenient that the one guy put his gun away.
Exactly. And at this point, they run behind a dumpster. And they hide a little bit behind the dumpster.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably, you know, kind of disgusting.
Yeah, probably. And then John grabs him and grabs Farrell, and they start moving towards John's car. And he goes, get in the car. Go, go. And John, you know, holds the assault rifle up that he's just taken, even though he has no idea where things should be coming from. You know, he's just holding it in front of him. And the two of them just get in the car, and Farrell looks like he's about to have a heart attack. And then John, for some reason, just starts driving in reverse.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things that you kind of, you always have those in these movies, right? There's always a moment where you've got to drive for a longer distance than what would seem appropriate in reverse. You know, it's like driving backwards is a skill that, you know, these action heroes must have.
That's right. you know, John McClane knows how to drive back.
But Al Powell is not as strong with it, though. You know, we should mention that.
No.
John does a better job of driving backwards here than Al does in the first movie.
That's right, because they're turning his car into Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I need backup now, goddammit, now.
And there's no big hill to drive the car off of here.
That's right. That's correct. And as he's driving backwards, John says to him, he goes, kid, can you reload a gun? He goes, what, me? Now, I love when he calls him kid, because it makes him sound like Indiana Jones talking to Short Round.
Sure, yeah.
Because also, Farrell, I wouldn't necessarily call him a kid. He's got to be in his mid-20s now, so he's not...
Well,
a kid. Johnny,
I mean, think in terms of, like, you know, we've already established the age range now that John's own children are at. We've seen Lucy,
right?
You know, so, you know, he refers to them, I'm sure, as his kids. He's gonna call them a kid, even though they're of that age, and he can recognize that this guy is probably about the same age as Lucy is, so he's a kid in his mind. I'd probably do the same thing with my kids and their friends.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. And then John asks him again, can you reload a gun? And he goes, open the glove box and get a magazine out of the thing right now.
I mean, I wouldn't know how to reload a gun. I'd have no idea.
Come on, you've seen enough movies.
Well, I've seen enough movies, but I'm also like, my first response to can you reload a gun is like, well, how many different kinds of guns are there? I mean, maybe I could piece it together from what I've seen in the movies, but, you know, it could be something completely different than what I've seen in a movie. I have no idea. I mean, what if it's like a revolver or something like that? I'd be fumbling around with the bullets and stuff.
Okay. Have you ever shot a gun in your life?
I have not. I mean, unless the gun from Duck Hunt counts. Does that count?
You don't have to load that one up. It's connected by a wire.
So yeah, that's about the extent of my experience with a gun.
Okay, so I'll give you a little bit of a tip. It's relatively simple. You take the magazine and you put it in the gun in the right place, and then you cock the gun, and therefore it's reloaded. That's as quickly. That's how you reload with an extra magazine. You know, because.
But I mean, surely there's a way that's front and back and things like that. I'd probably be like trying to put it in the wrong way, like I did with the USB port on my computer, and then I'd have to go and try the other way, and it still wouldn't work, and then I'd be going back and forth four times before I got it right.
Okay, well, let's hope you never have to be in a situation where you need to deal with it. How's that?
Well, I'm with you there. I certainly do not want to be in a situation where I have to reload a gun.
Right. Okay. All right. That is fair enough. Now, I just find it really funny that John has extra magazines in his glove compartment.
He's been through enough over the years. You know?
I understand that. I completely understand that. One of the things is obviously, you know, it's always good to have extra ammo with you when you're walking around with your gun. There's no question about that. I'm a firm believer in that, so that's fine. But I wouldn't keep it in my glove compartment because there's a thing called heat from the sun, and you don't necessarily want, you know, your bullets to heat up in the glove compartment.
Well, it's nighttime. He only puts them there at nighttime.
Again, knowing John McClane, he doesn't put them in his glove compartment every time he gets in the car. They're there.
You're right. I'm sure you're right.
Let's put it this way: the same argument I have with my two sons who are both deathly allergic to dairy. Okay, and they both carry EpiPens, and they keep the EpiPen in the car, and you're not supposed to do that for the same reason, because it heats up. But I don't think a 21-year-old and a 17-year-old really care what their parents tell them.
That just brought back memories for me of like when I was a kid and you used to go to the library and you check out record albums. Okay, we're talking vinyl record albums. And at least at the library that I grew up with, there was always a big sticker on the sleeve of the record that said, "Do not leave this in your car. It will melt."
That is very, very smart. It's a good thing that they tell you that.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. So basically, so they're going to take out these bullets, but I don't think they're going to get a chance to do it because as that's happening, we see something coming from afar towards John, through the window. You're not really sure what it is. Not 100% clear. And then we sort of find out that, someone just breaks through the window and shatters the window right in front of them. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, either he's got a really powerful punch there or, he must have something else on his hands.
He's a Terminator.
I don't know. I know they've. Yeah. Well, I know they've got these things now. Like I've seen it on the news and stuff where, like these cities where people are breaking into cars, all over the place. They've got these things that people will put on like gloves and they just, all they have to do is like tap the window a couple times and it bursts open. But no, it looks like this guy's doing it with his bare hand.
Yeah, that's the way it looks also. And, you know, at
this and also point, I'm thinking, doesn't he have a gun? I mean, because, I mean, who, he John just grabs John around the neck. Wouldn't he just try to blow his brains out instead?
Well, I guess it's more effective to do a wrestling move on him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's he going to do? Pull him through the window? Or I don't know. But, I mean, it makes for – I like where this goes, you know. I mean, if you're going to do something as ridiculous as this, at least it ends in a fun way.
That's true. So the guy grabs John by the by you know, around the neck and starts trying to strangle him. And John then says, as he's being strangled, he says to Farrell, he says, grab the gun from the back seat. And we see that he tries to grab it but doesn't really – you know, he's not very effective because he can't reach it. And mm-hmm. and then, you know, as that's happening, John just puts the car into drive and starts driving with the guy hanging on, you know, to, you know, on the outside of the car, you know, trying to strangle John. And John does a nice job of still mm-hmm. driving, and he gets back to where he was before by that garbage bin and just rams the guy right into the garbage bin.
Yes. Which, like I said, that's fun. Looks very painful. I'm down for that.
Yeah. And Farrell is just once again in shock about the whole thing. And John like wipes his mouth from drool or whatever it is. And then we get a shot of the second guy, who was the sniper, you know, running and jumping from building to building. And then he jumps down.
Yeah, apparently this guy does parkour on the weekends.
Yeah, seriously, just the way that he does this is just very interesting. And, you know, he also climbs down the fire escape at the same time also. And then ends up jumping onto the gate that John is about to drive into. And, you know, the gate breaks and flips, and the guy lands on the car holding onto the thing. And then John goes, Jesus, is the circus in town?
Which, I mean, that's the kind of great lines that you love out of John McClane. And I mean, it fits, I mean, considering the way this guy was bounding around and stuff. I mean, I was looking at these moves that he does, you know, he leaps across the alley from one building to another and all that. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure like Jackie Chan broke a foot on one of the movies, you know, he always does those outtake reels and such at the end. And I'm pretty sure he broke his foot doing a stunt like that. I want to say didn't Tom Cruise injure himself doing this type of stunt too on one of the Mission Impossibles? I mean,
it's true. Yeah. Okay. Now, do you know the origin of the word circus?
The origin of the word circus. I do not. I should, because, you know, like a lot of my friends that were clowns and magicians and things like that, you know, we would often refer to them as being like my circus friends.
But, okay. Yeah. So it's originally from the Greek, krikos, which means circle or ring, which obviously makes sense.
Yes.
And it partially is they. The claim is that the idea of the circus games were created by the goddess Circe in honor of her father Helios, which was the sun god. So the idea of it being a circle and stuff like that. Now, obviously, nowadays it's a little different. You know, you have the whole idea of the big top and you know, different types of entertainment, and you know, nobody really knows when circuses really began. The claim is that in ancient Rome they had like a roofless arena where they would have like horse and chariot races and things like that. And then you know, the modern format itself, they claim was created in 1742 in England by a man named Philip Astley. And he set up an amphitheater to display like horse riding tricks and stuff like that for people to come and watch, you know, the show. and stuff like that. Now, I was shocked a few years ago by the fact that, you know, the whole idea of the circus, of what we know of a circus growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, things have changed because they apparently no longer use animals in circuses.
Right.
You know, because of the idea that, it's there's it's cruelty to animals. So they have the what's known as the contempt circus, which apparently began around 1995, where the idea is that you know, you just see all the different acrobatic moves and stuff like that. They you know, you have like Cirque du Soleil and stuff like that, which deals with that type of stuff also. So it's interesting, you know, the like Cirque du Soleil, it's known as a new circus. That's like the form of circus, which sometimes would have animal acts, but nowadays they don't at all have them. You know, it still makes a lot of money. You know, the Cirque du Soleil, still makes millions every year.
I haven't been to any of those, you know, or any like of these new versions of what was kind of the traditional circus that we went to as a kid. Yeah, since they changed things without animals, I haven't seen any of that. But I mean, going to the circus was a yearly tradition. I remember, you know, the town I grew up with, in the circus would come to town. They'd set up in the fairgrounds every year, and we'd go every year. And it's a fond memory. I actually I watched a movie last night that had a circus in it, and I it was completely unexpected for me because it's a movie that's a Western, and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen a circus show up in a Western, at least not that I could remember.
Which Western was it? What were you watching?
So it's a movie called China Nine Liberty 37, and I do recommend it. It's very good.
I think I saw it a few months ago, if I remember correctly. It was an interesting film. I wouldn't say it was great, but it had its moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe was it there's one with Wild Bill Hickok. There's a Western that uses like circus type of stuff. I don't remember which one that one is either.
Well, you might be thinking of, you know, like the maybe not Wild Bill Hickok, but Buffalo Bill, you know, okay. I mean, his thing was kind of technically a circus. And, you know, so in various stories that involve him, like the first one that came to mind for me was Buffalo Bill and the Indians, which is Robert Altman's film with Paul Newman playing Buffalo Bill. But yeah, Buffalo Bill is celebrated out here because his final resting place is up on top of a mountain in Golden, Colorado, not terribly far from here. So I've been up there many times, and they do a celebration every summer that's called Buffalo Bill Days over there.
Cool. Okay. So at this point, you know, they continue with their drive, trying to, you know. And this guy is he's both on the hood and he's still on the chain link fence, you know, as they're, they continue to drive down there. And John, the guy is flying back and forth, but he's still holding on really well. And then John, you know, reaches the point where he also catapults him out of off of the chain link fence. And the guy lands in a pile of garbage. So he's I guess somewhat okay, you know.
He catches the corner of the chain link fence with another dumpster, I believe, and it basically launches the guy off of it, and it looks very painful. You know, he gets up after this a few seconds later, and I'm like, I don't think I'd be getting up that easily. He kind of hit the side of the building and you know, tumbled down hard there.
But again, we saw this guy jumping from building to building before, so he must have the stamina to do it again.
I guess so. Yeah, a few broken bones, no big deal. No. You know.
And then Farrell says to Johnny, "Did you see that?" And John goes, "Yeah, I saw it. I did it."
Did it.
Again, again, another typical John moment. And we see the guy fall on the ground and more or less still move. And then John turns onto the a busier street. They're no longer in the alleyway. And he takes his radio and says, Camden Base 10077, come back. Camden Base 10077. And then we hear a voice say, go ahead. He goes, I need to speak to the chief of your detectives. Police emergency, ASAP. Stand by. And then we get someone on the phone. And they say, this is Chief Detective Wiesman. And then John goes, this is Detective John McClain, NYPD. Police emergency. I want to report a police shooting in your jurisdiction. So the thing I found really cool is that who is the director of this movie?
I got to remember. Is it Wiesman?
Len Wiseman.
Wiseman. Okay. I knew I'd looked at it, but I couldn't, you know, it doesn't roll off the brain like John McTiernan or Rennie Harlan do. So,
but this is actually a cameo voice of the director.
Okay. Oh, cool. I love those kind of Easter eggs.
And the irony is that he pronounces his name Wiseman. Okay. But people on the crew thought that his name should be pronounced Wiesman. So that's why they changed it here. That he says this is Detective Wiesman instead of Wiseman.
Well, and if he's the chief detective, I'm surprised that he's working at like, what is it? Like 3 in the morning or something like that?
They probably don't have a very, very large detective force there.
Probably not.
He's
probably one of a couple, and he's the one that drew the short straw to work at late night shift.
I think that's what it comes down to in the end. The shot changes. We're no longer with John. We don't get to hear the rest of the conversation with Wiesman. But we do get to see beforehand Matt is just a complete wreck.
Yes. Appropriately so.
He has no idea what's going on. And then we're back to the guy by the garbage bin who stands up, staggers a little bit, and looks around.
Yes.
He pulls out a phone that starts ringing, and the second guy also gets closer to him. And then the first guy turns to the second guy and goes, "You tell her."
Yeah, I love the you don't want to be the person that tells the boss that you screwed up type of a thing.
So the second guy answers the phone and goes, yeah. And then we hear Maya's voice on the other end saying, what's the status? And then he says in French, we didn't get him. 3 of our men are down. And she goes, wait, one. And then we get to see her, walk through the building, basically. You know, they take a little bit of time as she's, moving from place to place, trying to... let us first of all see the geography of this of everything that's going on. Like we see the computer geeks in the background. You know, she leaves the truck, walks down the stairs. She's looking around again, giving us an idea of how many people are involved in this whole thing here. And then she climbs up another another flight of stairs, and she reaches where Gabriel is. And she says to him, Thomas, we had a problem in New Jersey. Farrell's still alive. Then he says, so he got away? Yeah. And then Gabriel takes the phone and says, I did send 5 of you. Is that right? And the answer is yes. And he goes, well, I'm sending a chopper. Just get airborne and we'll track him down. Think you can handle that? Which he doesn't even wait for the response.
One thing I gotta throw in here. I mean, this is Gabriel. Just I don't know. When it comes to the diehard villains, this is the one that I don't know. He just grates on me a bit. He just comes across as like a whiny little kid. You just want to smack him.
Completely.
I agree. I have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with this villain here, but I also think it's interesting going back a few seconds, you know, talking about the two henchmen and, you know, they've got the phone and all that kind of stuff. you know, I think it's interesting how you're referring to them as the first guy and the second guy, because we do not get colorful, memorable henchmen in this one. You know, I mean, like, you know, we think about the other ones and we know their names, you know, Carl, you know, Theo, you know, all this stuff. And these guys are just first guy and second guy, because they're very bland henchmen.
Correct. They're the circus guys.
Right, right. Yeah. The guys that go and do parkour on the weekend. Correct. Yeah.
Seriously, it's just very interesting. You know, the you're right. I mean, and in five, forget about that. You know, there's no.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's no way of dealing with particular names well, there.
The only one that comes close to being a memorable henchman is Mai, and I mean, spoiler alert here, folks, we get rid of her far too early in the movie, so
yeah. Yes, but they find a fun way to get rid of her, so you know that
I was gonna say, yeah, not that I don't like the way they get rid of her, I like that moment, but still, you know, you're not gonna get her, you know, her, you know, suddenly jumping back, you know, charred and bruised, waving a gun around like you do out of Alexander Gudinov at the end of the original movie. That's right. You know.
Okay, makes sense. And then the shot changes, and we're back in Camden again, watching John and Farrell in the car, and they have a very interesting conversation. Farrell just goes, "Oh my God." And John says, "Just breathe." Because I am breathing. I can't stop shaking. It's the adrenaline. You're just scared. It'll pass. Yeah, I'm scared. Weren't you scared back there? Yeah, I was scared. Really? This is you being scared? I don't know. Because you seem really calm. Have you done stuff like this before? Now, I mean, that's something that they always have to throw into all of these Die Hard movies. You know, a reference to the fact that this is not John McClane's first rodeo. You know, that type of thing. And then John gives him a smart-ass answer and goes, "Stuff like what?" He goes, "Like killing people." He goes, "Yeah, but not for a long time. You know, it has been 12 years since the last movie." So,
I was gonna say, I wanted him to add to that line and say, "Not for a long time." I think it's been like 12 years or so.
that would have been great if he would have added it, but he did not.
Well, and you know, this scene in general, I think, is, you know, this is trying to, I think, do a little bit of what we got out of the dynamic between McClane and Zeus in the last one. You know, I'm not going to claim that this movie has as strong a dynamic there, but it's decent. It makes a valiant effort, I would say. Because, you know, in the first two, we're so used to John working alone a lot of times. And the third one, it really worked having him play off another person. They're trying to do some of that again here. And though it's not as well done, because, I mean, part of that was Samuel L. Jackson, for sure. It's not as cool in this one. But still, they make a decent effort.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And, I mean, well, I just want to continue with the dialogue here, because it's very... I like why they do this. The coming parts of the dialogue is what really tells us why they're having this conversation. And then Farrell says to him, "So who were those guys? Why were they trying to kill you? Why did they blow up my goddamn apartment?" And then John says, "They were there to kill you." And he goes, "Why would they want to kill me?" He goes, "You tell me, kid. You're the criminal." So, you know, the idea that Farrell has absolutely no clue as to what is really happening here and why, you know, why that these guys were after him says so much about his character, because, you know, here's a guy who is a hacker for hire, I guess you can say. And, you know, he did his job and that's it. He's moving along. You know, he doesn't think about it. Obviously he knows he's breaking the law, but he doesn't care. It's not really something that changes the way he lives his life type of thing.
Well, and he doesn't see what he's doing as being something that ever hurts people or anything like that. And here suddenly it's, you know, brought into a different realm for him.
And not only that, here he's already in shock that people are trying to kill them. And the whole time he thinks that it's John that they're trying to kill. He doesn't even think about the fact that they're trying to kill him, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And that's how this 5-minute segment ends. So, Todd, did you have anything else you wanted to add to these 5 minutes?
No, I don't think so. I think we okay, got it pretty excellent. Good there.
So, the segment that we will be doing today is Top Cop, where my guests will give their top five movie detectives or policemen, however you want to look at it. So, Todd, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
So first of all, I do appreciate that you sent me a list on Wikipedia of stuff, because I was trying to go, okay, police detectives, you know, how do I narrow this down and such? So let's actually start with Joe Friday, which I know is also a TV character, but I love Dan Aykroyd's portrayal of him in Dragnet. And then let's go with Harry Callahan, of course, from the various Dirty Harry films, number four. My number three is funny. I searched that list and couldn't find it on there. I was like, why is he not on there? But Axel Foley, Beverly Hills Cop, is going to be my number three. My number two is going to go to my love of classic movies, and especially the Universal Monsters. But I'm going to go with Inspector Krog from Son of Frankenstein, Lionel Atwell, the guy with the mechanical arm, which is parodied in Young Frankenstein. And then my first, I had to go with a comedy character rather than just a pure action type character. So Frank Drebin of Police Squad is going to be my number one.
Oh, that is a great list. And there is not a single one on this list that was the same as Jay's was earlier this week. So there you go. Give me a segment.
Very good.
Giving us a lot of diversity. All right. Excellent. Thank you for that. So also every day we have a game called State Your Motto. Okay. So obviously one of the names of this movie is Live Free or Die Hard, which is a motto of the state of New Hampshire. It's the state motto.
Ah, yes. As a matter of fact, I was doing my daily walk around my office building a few days ago, and I saw a New Hampshire license plate randomly in the parking lot, and I was like, oh yeah, their motto is the live free or die one.
So what I'm basically going to do is I'm going to give you I'm going to choose a state. And then I'm going to give you three choices as to what could be. These are all real state mottos. So you have to try and guess which is the right one for the state that I'm going to choose. So today's state.
Oh, I want to phone a friend. I want to bring my son in here because he'd nail this. But
today's state for you is Colorado.
I figured.
Okay. Yep. So your three choices are A, by the sword we seek peace, but peace only under liberty. Okay. The second choice is nothing without providence. Okay. And the third one is liberty and prosperity. Now, again, all three of these are real state mottos, but only one of them is from Colorado.
Okay, so the first one doesn't sound familiar at all. So I'm gonna move away from that one. What was the second one again?
Nothing without providence.
Okay, so that actually sounds possible, but part of me wants, I kind of want to go with the third one. What was it? Liberty and prosperity.
That is the third one. Yes.
I think I'm going to lean towards that one. I think that's good. I am guessing here, but I think I'm going to go with that one.
Okay. And you are unfortunately wrong. The answer is nothing without providence.
Ah.
The Latin is nil sine numine, N-U-M-I-N-E, which is nothing without providence.
See, when you said that one, I thought it sounds good, but the reason liberty and prosperity jumped to me is because the prosperity part made me think, okay, maybe that has to do with like Colorado's history when it comes to like gold and that type of thing. So I kind of leaned towards that. But
and that anyway. Is actually the reason why I threw that one in there for you.
You're good. What can I say?
All right. Well, better luck tomorrow on the next one.
Okay.
At least you know it won't be Colorado. So there you
yes.
go.
Yes.
Because again, we only have 47 episodes, so I don't need to reuse states. You know, and I'm also good. Using there's a few U.S. territories that are listed on here also. There are five territories that I'm using also. You have American Samoa, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands.
Okay.
Because I obviously can't use New Hampshire.
Yeah, right.
Quite a problem with that one. All right. Todd, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Todd Liebenow?
Of course. So, yeah, my podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that wherever you find your podcasts. I do also have a site, which is forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And I'm on all the various social medias and things like that. So, yeah, tune into my show.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.